Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr. with Ausperity Private Wealth. Retirement planning is more than just saving money. It's creating the life you've always dreamed of with financial freedom. I specialize in retirement and legacy planning. Build a strong financial portfolio so you'll enjoy retirement and leave your family a strong financial legacy. Secure your financial freedom. Call me, Mike Venaria Jr. at 856-252-0107.
Securities through Sanctuary Securities, Inc. Member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services through Sanctuary Advisors, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes five times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Ausperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here today. It is Friday. What have we learned about the confidential human sources, the IG's report? There's a lot to talk about it, but there's one person who knows better than anybody, and that's my friend Julie Kelly, political commentator, writer for Real Clear Investigations, and author of the book January 6th, How Democrats Used the Capitol Protests to Launch a War of Terror Against the Political Right. And she joins me now on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Julie Kelly, thanks for joining me.
Hey, Rich. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
I just saw Congressman Tom Massey tweet out, unbelievable, the new DOJ IG report reveals FBI paid a confidential human source for travel to D.C. on January 6th. The FBI knew the confidential human source entered the Capitol. They then tasked the confidential human source to attend the inauguration and repaid him. That's right. Paid, not prosecuted. That just came out a few moments ago.
Correct. Yes. So this is the long-awaited DOJ Inspector General report. It was supposed to be into the entire Department of Justice's role in January 6th. This is just a sliver of that. Michael Horowitz releasing this 88-page, mostly filler document that did confirm that he found 26 FBI informants, also known as confidential human sources, were in Washington on January 6th. No one, including myself, believes that that figure is accurate, at least no one who's been following all the court proceedings in these cases. So nonetheless, at least four of them entered the building, which is a federal crime, a felony. And then there were several others who were on restricted grounds, also a crime for which hundreds of Americans have been charged. But this is just scratching the surface, Rich. Not only were there more, definitely more FBI assets on the ground that day, but there were undercovers and probably other sources from multiple law enforcement agencies in Washington that we also know about from the court proceedings. But we will, I'm sure, learn much more about this and get more of the truth once Donald Trump is in office.
I hope so. And Kash Patel and Pam Bondi, and they can release a lot of this information, because right now we don't have any names, right?
Of the sources, the confidential human sources?
Yeah.
No, and we probably won't find out their names, but I think we'll get a much better accounting of how many there were. And also, I would like to see the documentation, the text messages between FBI handling agents and their sources, kind of similar to what we saw in the Whitmer Fednapping hoax, hundreds of messages of FBI handlers instructing their informants what to do to lure men into that trap. So I'm very, would be very interested to see those text messages. And honestly, Rich, the American people deserve it. January 6th has dominated the news and political discourse for almost 4 years. We have 1,580 Americans now investigated, arrested, and charged for their participation in a four-hour protest now almost 4 years ago. This was used to impeach Donald Trump. This has been described as an insurrection. People are rotting in jail for years. So we need a full accounting of the government's role, including communications between all law enforcement agents and any of their sources that they used before and on that day.
What other questions do you have, Julie? Like, for, I mean, like Ray Epps, for example, is the first person that comes to my mind in terms of telling people to go into the Capitol tomorrow. We go in the Capitol and then being there that day. And I mean, and that guy, I want to know. I know you're saying we won't know any names, but I mean, come on, we should at least have to know about that guy since the media has turned him into a martyr.
Absolutely. And I'm sure that Kash Patel will want to find out which agency he was aligned with, because it's just impossible to believe his story that he was there on his own, that not only his actions on the 6th, which resulted in many charges for other individuals. In fact, there was a defendant who was just sentenced to 70 months in prison for doing the same thing Ray Epps did, with the exception of going inside the building. Ray Epps was handling a large metal Trump sign that was shoved towards police officers. He had his hands on that sign. So did this other defendant, but he was charged with assaulting police and a bunch of other counts. Ray Epps gets a plea deal for disorderly conduct, I think, and gets probation, and is defended by the very same people who call every other J6er a traitor, a terrorist, insurrectionist. So it's hard to believe his story. And I think that that's just one of many individuals that we will finally learn the truth about. Of course, federal court tossing out Ray Epps' defamation lawsuit against Fox News. So he's on a little bit of a losing streak. We'll see if it continues.
I saw you retweeted another tweet from Congressman Tom Massey. Today's shocking DOJ IG report provides President Trump with all the needs to pardon January 6ers on day one. I urge him to do so. MAGA January 6ers were prosecuted by the DOJ for coming to the Capitol. FBI January 6ers were reimbursed by the DOJ for coming to the Capitol on January 6th. I assume in retweeting that, Julie Kelly, you agree they should be pardoned?
Oh, yes. I definitely agree, with the exception of a few who, you know, these informants, at least that Michael Horowitz identified, have not been charged with any criminal misconduct. But I suspect that there were others who were, and those with criminal records, I think the president and his team should take a closer look at. But yes, for the most part, everyone, even those accused of assaulting police, and there are just some really bogus examples of assault on police, resulted in excessive sentences with no comparison, not only in other jurisdictions, but certainly not in Washington. And so you've got people sitting in rotting in jail for 6, 7, 10, 12 years, convicted by D.C. juries of assaulting police. Those cases also should result in pardons, because even if there were scuffles with police, police were the aggressors that day. Maybe hard for people to hear, but that is a fact. And in many cases, these defendants were defending themselves or others from police using excessive force. And of course, three Trump supporters killed as a result of excessive lethal force that day. So those cases have to be considered. And that's why I strongly disagree with people like Senator Ted Cruz suggesting that defendants who were convicted by D.C. juries, all Democrats, of attacking or assaulting police should not be pardoned. That's just a function of not understanding the cases or the rigged legal and judicial system in the nation's capital against Trump supporters.
Yeah, and you've studied this better than anybody, and I think a lot of that also comes from a reflexive reaction to saying, well, it's a police officer, therefore, and, you know, dot, dot, dot. So, I think your point is well taken on that. The other point of this, too, which is frustrating, is that we were all told that if you suggested that the FBI had sources on the ground that day, that you were promoting a vast right wing conspiracy, mm-hmm. and you were going to cause violence, you were going to cause domestic violent extremists to act, you were going to cause another January 6th. We were accused of all of these things for years.
That's right. And you could see the little chum that Michael Horowitz, who is an Obama appointee, and despite occasionally coming up with some interesting facts like he did with his investigation into FISA abuse, he's still a company guy and he's still largely a Democratic operative behind the scenes. But so what he added to his report yesterday is that he found no evidence that FBI undercover agents were involved in January 6th. Now, that's far different than informants. Informants mm-hmm. are private individuals who work with FBI agents and are paid in cash to provide information or infiltrate certain groups or, you know, make up a kidnapping hoax in the state of Michigan. So he threw that out there, and that's what you see the regime media running with. Oh, there weren't any undercover agents. That's why this conspiracy theory, you know, is crashing. No, the conspiracy theory is not a conspiracy. It is that the FBI had informants that we know for a fact from court proceedings, especially high profile trials like the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers. The government admitted in the Proud Boys seditious conspiracy trial that at least 9 FBI informants were in that group. The Oath Keepers had at least 5 informants, including the number 2, I guess you would call him the deputy director of the Oath Keepers, was working with the feds. So were they inciting violence? Were they doing sort of the things we saw in the Whitmer Fed napping? Most of them probably weren't, but certainly we need a full accounting of the ones we don't know about who were not embedded in those groups and, you know, what they were doing at the Capitol, inside or outside.
Yeah, and exactly. If you follow Julie on X, and you absolutely should, she's at Julie_Kelly2, you point out that there are no text messages included in all this. There are no copies of any of those. And you point the Whitmer case out as a great example of that. And we've talked about this a lot, and you mentioned it earlier. But here you had agents who were instructing their confidential human informants how to lure targets into a trap. So that then begs the question, did that occur on January the 6th? Did the FBI, were FBI agents telling those people that were on the ground that day, the at least 23 that we know of and probably more, to do certain things to lure them into a trap as well and to lure other people into a trap?
Well, we also know for a fact that, say, in the Proud Boys case, one government witness, I believe it was an FBI agent, said that there were probably up to 24 informants who were involved in these group chats. Mm-hmm. So they had all these group chats with the Proud Boys, and you would have an anonymous poster, you know, say, hey, let's go to the Capitol. Let's drag Nancy Pelosi. Let's do this. Let's do that. And inciting, you know, their targets or other informants who are in the chat group, you know, to talk about violence. Well, those text messages were used as evidence against the Proud Boys, except you didn't know who some of these anonymous posters were. And when, say, the defense attorneys tried to get more information about the FBI informants in that group, they were denied that by the government and allowed to do so by the judges. So the fact that Michael Horowitz, he has no access to all of these records, especially the ones that are used in trial because they're under strict protective orders. Are you telling me Michael Horowitz unsealed all of these records from these court cases to see who these informants were and what they were doing? He said that he has emails and messages. Why isn't that part of the report? The American people deserve all of the information, not just cherry-picked and watered down like we got from Michael Horowitz yesterday.
Thank you for never letting up on this, Julie Kelly. You deserve a medal. Julie Kelly, thank you, my friend. To be continued for sure. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Rich. Thanks for having me on. Talk to you soon.
All right, as we continue along the show here today on a Friday, also want to let you know that there's new developments coming out around Joe Biden's pardons, one in particular in Pennsylvania that I think is going to irk you in a big, big way. And also, two, Kash Patel
making the rounds, but the corporate media is doing what they're doing, and they're trying to say that Kash Patel will not get confirmed. I don't believe that for a second. I'll give you my thoughts on that as well as the show goes on. Dr. Victoria Coates is going to join us in a little bit. Before I go to break, though, I want to just play for you a clip of Governor Josh Shapiro addressing this Kids for Cash sentence, this judge who got pardoned here or commuted. The sentence was commuted. And now, the governor was at an unrelated event in Scranton, Pennsylvania. I'm going to play you what he said, and I'll give you more details on exactly what this case was all about. I'm sure you're very familiar with it. But nevertheless, this is what Governor Shapiro said earlier today regarding Biden's commutation of this sentence, cut 25.
What about the Cash for Kids scandal, Kids for Cash?
Yeah. The scandal in general, or what?
Well, specifically about, you know, yesterday, President Biden issued a list of people who were, you know,
their commutations.
Commutations, thank you. And so one of the judges involved in the.
Yeah. Look, governors and presidents have unique power to grant pardons and clemency and commute sentences. It is an absolute power. And it is a power that should be used incredibly carefully. I study every single case that comes across my desk where there's a request for a pardon or clemency or a reduction of sentence. And I take it very seriously. I weigh the merits of the case. I weigh what occurred in the court proceedings. I think about public safety and victims. And all of those issues factor into my decision. I recognize that those on the outside can question those decisions, as you are here today and posing a question to me as to the clemency granted by President Biden. So I'll offer these thoughts as an outsider, not privy to all the information he looked at. But I do feel strongly that President Biden got it absolutely wrong and created a lot of pain here in northeastern Pennsylvania. This was not only a black eye on the community, the Kids for Cash scandal, but it also affected families in really deep and profound and sad ways. Some children took their lives because of this. Families were torn apart. There was all kind of mental health issues and anguish that came as a result of these corrupt judges deciding they wanted to make a buck off a kid's back. Frankly, I thought the sentence that the judge got was too light. And the fact that he's been allowed out over the last years because of COVID, was on house arrest, and now has been granted clemency, I think is absolutely wrong. He should have been in prison for at least the 17 years that he was sentenced to by a jury of his peers. He deserves to be behind bars, not walking as a free man.
Bravo, Governor Shapiro. It's exactly right. So what do these judges do? It was a scheme to funnel juvenile defendants to privately operated for-profit detention centers, and then they got financial kickbacks as a result. The actions led to the wrongful imprisonment of numerous children, many of whom were sent to detention for minor or questionable offenses. The scandal, one of the worst abuses of judicial power in U.S. history, devastated families and exposed deep flaws in the justice system, as you heard the governor talk about there. This is a disgrace. This is an absolute disgrace. These were kids. This was an abuse of the system by the people who are entrusted to guard the constitutional rights of people, judges who are entrusted to guard the constitutional rights of children, kids who went through heightened emotional trauma, psychological trauma, suicides. You heard the governor talk about that. Families torn apart, people's lives ruined for the rest of their life, so that these judges could line their pockets. It's outrageous. Absolutely outrageous stain on the judicial branch of government in Pennsylvania. I'm a nation. Because corrupt judges, I mean, there's, in my opinion, a special spot in hell for them. But particularly when you're talking about children, and these guys are scumbags of the highest degree. Scumbags, dirtbags, D-bags, all those terms apply to these guys and what they did. Getting kickbacks to send kids who didn't deserve to be sent to these for-profit detention centers. Fake cases, fake sentences, outrageous. And the governor's right. These guys should be in jail for their full term. And it is so wrong. And you know what probably happened in this case? Somebody made a phone call to somebody, and somebody paid somebody, and then clemency's granted. Because that's how it works in a lot of these cases. But this is a disgrace. Joe Biden's a disgrace. Absolute disgrace. What he's doing here in his last days in office, between this and selling the border wall and commuting the term of a Chinese spy with kiddie porn images, 47,000 kiddie porn images, it's outrageous. It's an absolute disgrace. Absolutely. All right, listen. McCausland Lock and Alarm, your business, your future, you got to protect it. Every day, you got to watch out for it. How do you do that? Reach out to my buddy Tom McCausland. McCausland Lock and Alarm. They're going to help you secure your facilities. What does that mean? That means a key card system so that you know who has access where in your facility and when. Camera system, state-of-the-art camera system, so you can keep an eye on everything that's going on in your facilities as well. You need this in this day and age. It's your business. These are your assets. You got to protect them. So why Tom McCausland, you might ask? Well, he's a great friend of the show. He's a great friend of the community. He's a great friend of veterans. Always gives back to the Travis Manning Foundation Radiothon that we do every March. And he's a local guy. He's going to help you himself. If you ever have an issue, you're not going to get stuck in some 1-800 hellhole. No, you'll talk to somebody local, probably Tom himself, who's going to help you out. That's what's great about it. Plus, he's an expert. He knows what you need, and he's going to customize a solution for you and your business. So protect your business, secure your assets, secure your future by reaching out to my friend, Tom McCausland, at 610-430-1500. 610-430-1500. McCausland Lock and Alarm, securing your business, securing your future.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, I'm going to trust that she's there. Let's hope. She is the former Deputy National Security Advisor to President Donald Trump. She is the Vice President of the Davis Institute for Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation. She is the author of the must-read book, Battle for the Jewish State, How America and Israel Can Win. She is our one and only Philly's own Dr. Victoria Coates. Hello, my friend. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, Rich. How's your foot?
Oh, it's healing up. Thank you for asking. Though I think it's infected because it's got a little oozy, so the doctor had to put me on an antibiotic today. Yeah. So,
well,
got that
good
going
luck
for
with
me,
it.
Which is nice. But it's all right. I've been on the radio since noon today. I filled in for Jimmy Fallon on his radio show, Fox Across America. So I've just been sitting. So it's sure that's really great for my my metabolism. How are you doing?
I am doing well. I just had, you know, three really great days in New York doing book launch publicity, kind of wrapping up the week, now getting ready for you know, the big publication date on Tuesday. So I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about it and hopefully do some good in this world.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the book. Let's start there. Why did you write it? What, I mean, obviously, we know a lot that's going on here, but you tie it to Israel and how Israel and America can win. So explain to us how you got to that conclusion.
Now, this has really been a kind of the revelation, and we've talked a lot about it over the course of the last year, but the Battle for the Jewish State brings it all into one place. Why this isn't just a war on Israel, it's also a war on America. And I was honored, my old boss Ted Cruz wrote the foreword on this topic, which I think is particularly important to us here at Penn, because he talked, or in Pennsylvania rather, because he talks about the testimony of the three presidents, including Amy McGill, the former president of Penn, who has since resigned but remains a tenured faculty member at the law school. So, you know, she's just winding up her semester right now as we speak, continuing to teach her students that she doesn't think the annihilation of Jews actually constitutes genocide. So that's what Senator Cruz writes about. And then I go into it some depth, you know, why this is happening on campuses. you know, why Israel and America are singled out as these settler colonial nations, in, which are illegally appropriated from indigenous peoples by outsiders, and, you know, why Israel is such an important ally to the United States. That's been a big sort of trajectory for Israel over the last 50 years, to go from a very needy, vulnerable nation to a very powerful nation. Now, that can be a great deal of assistance to the United States. And I think most people want to be supportive of the alliance, but they're not sure why. And then, you know, just finally to catalog the differences in approaches between the Biden-Harris administration and the Trump administration, that you have two very distinct policy approaches to the region, one of which resulted in the Abraham Accords, and now President Trump has been reelected. I think we can look forward to even better things in his second term. But bear in mind, Biden-Harris was really a continuation of Obama-Biden. That was the same policy, and it led to disruption, war, terrorist attacks, and they've done it twice now. So the reason I think the book remains important is, even with President Trump's reelection, is they may try again in 28 to bring back these horrible policies, and we need to remember how very destructive they are.
No question about it. And obviously, Iran has grown stronger and more powerful. Congressman Jeff Van Drew shocked the world this week with a suggestion that possibly this could be the, all these drones we're talking about could be from Iran. We know that they did launch a ship in mid-November. That was a ship that would, you know, fly drones from it. So it's not a crazy conspiracy theory that Iran has this technology. But there's an axis here with Iran, and it's China and it's Russia. And obviously, where we were with looking at Israel becoming very close to Saudi Arabia and forging that alliance, and that blew up in this administration, and then the forces that want to see Israel's destruction have gotten a lot stronger, but they also, particularly with Iran's case, they want to see America's destruction as well.
Exactly. And don't forget about our North Korean friends in there. They're meddling in all of this as well. I think, you know, that's why we have to see this as a broader war, because, you know, most Americans, I mean, I don't want most Americans worrying about what's going on in the Middle East. I think one of my favorite lines in a NSC meeting during the first Trump term, which I was chairing, was on Yemen. And I said, you know, 90% of the American people cannot find Yemen on a map. And I know they all wanted me to say, oh, and, you know, isn't that terrible? And we need to take geography. And what I said was, and it is our job to keep it that way. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want people knowing about these places or worrying about them. They have more important things to do. But, you know, in the case of the Israel alliance, you know, it does materially contribute to our security here, as well as to Israel's security in the Middle East. And so that's why I think it demands our attention.
And in addition to that, I mean, right now, this administration, Tony Blinken is really running the show. I mean, I think that that's pretty obvious, especially when it comes to
it appears that way.
Right. I mean, that, yeah, it's like Biden is clearly checked out, and Blinken is just assuming the power. It's kind of reminds me of when after President Reagan was shot, you know, and Alexander Haig said, I'm in charge. But in this case now, like, Blinken really is in charge. I have no doubts about that. So something he said earlier this week, which made a lot of people just, you know, shake their heads again and get very, very upset, is the fact that when we were talking about the withdrawal of Afghanistan, we're talking about what a disaster that is. And then he wound up saying, and I'm going to play the clip for you real quick, if I could. This was during a House hearing. Representative Tim Burchett asking the Secretary of State the following question here. Cut number 20.
A friend, legend, an Afghan-American and former U.S. Army non-commissioned officers traveled to Afghanistan after the collapse and reports that the Taliban has been benefiting from U.S. cash shipments sent to the Afghan Central Bank. This is American funds. And that was sanctioned, and that sanctioned terrorists are diverting U.S. aid meant for the Afghan people. Why are we giving the Taliban millions in taxpayers' dollars while they hold Americans hostage and are killing the Afghan people? And in my opinion, sir, they will hate us for free. We don't need to give them money.
We're not giving the Taliban anything. As I discussed with Congressman Mast, we are providing money, as many other countries are, to UN agencies, NGOs, to help the Afghan people.
And these agencies are funding the Taliban. Reports are saying between, reports say between 40 and 80 million U.S. tax dollars are given to the Taliban every dadgum week. I mean, is that acceptable?
According to the report that I read and that Congressman referred to, the SIGARS report, of the approximately $8 billion that the international community, including the United States, has dedicated to Afghanistan, about $10 million of that, that is 0.1%, has no doubt gotten to the Taliban in terms
of I don't care if it's a penny. I mean, for you to sit up here and admit that that our enemies, I mean, these people swear to hate Christians and Jews, and that takes care of about everybody in this dadgum room, and we're sending them, I don't care if it's 1%, and you can... But let me tell you, $10 million is a hell of a lot of money, the people I represent.
First of all, props to him for using dadgum so many times, because last time I heard it was Mater in cars. So that's number one. But number two, look, the UN, these NGOs, I mean, this is a real problem here. And I got to hand it to Senator John Fetterman, who said the exact same thing the other day, and how these NGOs and the UNRWA, these are anti-Israel entities. They're working to help the terrorists in the region, and enough is enough here.
Oh, absolutely. And this is such an absolute outrage. And I mean, I didn't realize I was going to become a John Fetterman plan. That wasn't on my bingo card for 2024. But, you know, he's saying some really great things. And I think he has an opportunity in a couple of weeks to vote his conscience. And we'll see how he votes on President Trump's nominees. And that will be, I think, some proof of maybe a change of heart there. But this is a broader problem. And yes, it is a bad problem in Afghanistan, where the secretary knows that money is going straight to the Taliban. They know the NGOs and the United Nations have no interest in keeping the money from the Taliban. This is fine with them. This is a feature, not a bug. And as you said, it's broader. It extends to all of the pro-Palestinian NGOs. And they admitted in a previous testimony that, yes, they knew when they turned the spigots of aid to the Palestinians back on. And I mean, they did it immediately in March of 2021. It was one of their first decisions was to do that and send hundreds of millions in so-called COVID aid, which was just a down payment on more than $1 billion that have gone in even more since October 7th. They said they know that all is going to Hamas. It was reported this week that 10% of the sainted Chef Jose Andres's World Kitchen, World Central Kitchen Group, 10% of them are card-carrying Hamas members. More than that for the United Nations Relief Works Agency, UNRWA, which provides theoretically schools and hospitals, but actually participated in the October 7th attack. So I think not another dime to any of this. I would personally defund the entire UN, as Senator Mike Lee has proposed. But, you know, failing that, at least the overtly pro-terrorist elements should be defunded again, because President Trump did it before. And, you know, this is an excellent project for the DOGE team to go after this and expose how wastefully our money is being spent, and in a way that is counterproductive to our security.
The book is The Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. The author is Dr. Victoria Coates, Philadelphia's own. She joins me right now on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. So now, in thinking of the hostages that are being held right now in Gaza. And so there's a couple stories here. Hamas concedes on Israeli troops in Gaza, raising hopes for a hostage deal. There's also talk now about the ceasefire, that this thing could really happen. U.S. hopes for a Gaza ceasefire and a hostage deal this month. So as the expert, as the author of this upcoming book, which comes out, you said, on Tuesday, if I believe. Is that right?
Tuesday. It's upon us. Yep.
Yeah. All right. So your thoughts on that?
I think it's about time. Israel appears to have degraded Hamas to the point that it cannot reconstitute itself as an organized military force. And now it should be the phase of trying to get some kind of administrative leadership back into the strip so to some extent life can return to normal. But the key concession here, and this is so important, is Hamas has insisted from the get-go, and their UN enablers have insisted that a full Israeli withdrawal from Gaza be part of any ceasefire or any hostage deal. And that now has passed. I think Hamas has realized that's simply not feasible. I think they've realized they cannot win. I think they've realized that Donald Trump was elected president of the United States, and so their golden age is over. And I think his statement on the hostages from last week is incredibly important, and it is what is driving this, is they know he's coming. And they should have a very strong sense of impending doom, because I think if those hostages, especially the four living Americans, aren't out of there before January 20th, as he said, there's going to be hell to pay. And from somebody like Donald Trump, that could be anything. So I think we are moving to a logical end stage here. And the other thing, though, that we have, which is new, is the collapse of Syria, which commands a lot of Israeli attention. They're very, very actively going through and destroying the arsenal of Bashar al-Assad, which is a great thing to do for humanity. They have taken some additional Syrian territory that is entirely of their right to do, given the threat that comes from inside the country. So I think Israel's needs to wrap up in Gaza, but with the understanding that they're going to retain the ability to control the strip and prevent another October 7th.
Thinking in terms of, because I do want to ask you about the drones, but I'd be remiss, obviously, if I didn't ask you about the fall of Bashar al-Assad, and then what does all that mean for the region, and then the search for chemical weapons. So I know we talked about it when it happened initially, but since that time has passed now, where do you view that situation?
Yeah, I remain very, very concerned about the HTS group that has essentially taken over the government of Syria, backed by the Turkish regime of Erdogan, because they've appointed their sort of what they refer to as their secular technocrats who are going to run the country. Well, they're all male Muslim, I would call extremists, all ISIS and Al-Qaeda alums, not a woman, not a minority to be found, not a single Druze, not a single Christian, God forbid a Jew. All of these groups are prominent in Syria, but none of them got any representation. That's concern number one. Concern number two is HTS announced today that the destruction of the SDF, the Syrian Democratic Forces in the northeast of the country that have been the partners to the United States, that the destruction of the SDF is a strategic goal of theirs. So what we're looking at is a potential proxy war between the United States and Turkey in Syria. That's a problem.
That sounds like a very big problem.
A fellow NATO member, the largest military in Europe, I don't like Erdogan. I don't like where he's taking the country. This is an example of it. But, at some point under different leadership, Turkey could be a very important ally to the United States. This could upset any chance of that happening in our lifetimes. And so, this was an Obama-era policy that has always had that inherent problem baked into it, not surprisingly, it being an Obama idea, that it was never going to be able to succeed. And finally, we've got the Turks trying to finish it off, I think, also before Donald Trump comes back into office. So this could get pretty sporty pretty quickly.
All right. I want to play a clip of New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy responding to what Congressman Jeff Van Drew said. But I think there's one particular part of this that I really want to get your reaction to regarding what he says about Iran. So take a listen, Dr. Coates, please.
A mothership.
Whatever that
Come
means.
On, man. The Department of Defense said there's zero evidence to that effect. FBI said zero evidence. I'm not sure what he's been watching lately, but he might want to watch the news. Israel has decapitated Iran. And we have, through economic sanctions, I don't think they've got boats off the coast of Iran right now. So let's not fearmonger this.
His royal ruggedness, King Philip the Unaccountable. Is it true that that Israel has decapitated Iran, Dr. Coates?
No, that's just disingenuous. And I mean, where to begin? As my old boss, Don Rumsfeld, used to say, the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. just because they don't have, you know, a made in Iran sticker on a drone doesn't mean that it's, you know, that it's not true. And yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is they can't disprove it either. And so, you know, this is, as I said, disingenuous on the face of it. Also, what he's saying about Iran is just ignorant. And of course, Israel has dealt some very serious blows to Iran, no thanks to the Biden-Harris administration or to the governor of New Jersey, for that matter. They've done it, taken it into their own hands to do this, and, you know, degraded Hezbollah, degraded Hamas. These are great and good things for the world. But at the same time, bear in mind, their Houthi terrorist proxies are still acting up, and their largest proxies are at this point the popular mobilization forces in Iraq. And those guys are fat and happy, because guess who else we're sending pallets of cash to monthly? Iraq, which it keeps its currency stable, and they use that money to pay the PMF. So you know, it is hardly the case that Iran is decapitated. And the last thing I think Governor Murphy might want to take a look at is their nuclear program, and where the progress they've made over the last 4 years. When we left, they were under 5% enrichment with less than 1,000 centrifuges. Now they're barreling toward 80% enrichment with thousands upon thousands of centrifuges, and they just announced they're going to have more spinning in the immediate future. And so that's what the Biden-Harris administration has seen happen. And that's why Iran remains a flashing red light. And they are also getting a ton of money from China for oil sales, as we've discussed. So that's just a really patronizing, as I said, ignorant take on the situation, akin to what they started telling us about the Chinese spy balloon when that emerged. Oh, it's fine. It's fine. No, yeah. It's not fine. And you and I both know this isn't normal. I mean, you know, I live in a flight pattern. I'm used to having planes go over my house. I know what that's like. This isn't normal. And Baghdad Bob, I mean, John Kirby said earlier today when he had sort of an unfortunate interview with Martha McCallum on Fox.
Oh, we played it. I took it live on the show. Oh, yeah. It was great. Oh, she was terrific.
She was fantastic. But I mean, as you listen to Kirby, who yesterday was saying, oh, this is lawful, it's all fine. Mm-hmm. Suddenly it's don't go near one. If one goes down, call a bomb squad.
Right.
Please do tell us if you have any further sightings. I mean, this is ridiculous. They should be out in front of this thing, explaining to people what's going on. No, you don't want to create panic, but everybody knows this isn't normal. And so you're making it worse by making it seem like you're hiding something or slow walking something, or that you are so far behind, you don't have any idea what's going on.
What do you think they could be? I mean, what do you have? Do you have a spidey sense here of anything?
Here's my unfounded conspiracy theory, which I will happily share with your listeners. I think there is an agreement somewhere, whether it is part of the Paris Climate Accords or part of the Obama-era scientific deals, particularly with China, but some of these are much broader, like Paris, that surveillance of weather patterns is permitted. And I think that's what the spy balloon was. This is fine with them. They think it's climate science that they're working on. And the Chinese and possibly the Iranians and all the other hostile drone producers, again, don't forget about the Russians, don't forget about the North Koreans. They all know these are that there is this agreement for climate surveillance, if this is indeed the case, and that this is permissible under this administration. So I'm very hopeful that John Ratcliffe, who should be a very quick confirmation for the CIA, I'm very hopeful Tulsi Gabbard, who hopefully will be equally quick for DNI, they're not going to just take the IC's, the intelligence community's word for this, that, oh, it's all fine, it's all lawful. No, you know, let's find out what, get to the bottom of it. And I don't trust any of these people to be involved in any kind of climate research. It's a front. It's a canard that they're exploiting to surveil really sensitive areas. It's not a surprise that this is happening around Bedminster and the military assets in northern New Jersey, not to mention the ways in and out of Manhattan. So I, quite frankly, January 20th can't come fast enough. because I think this is yet another security situation that they're bungling.
Well, there's the soundbite. Thank you for giving it to us. We're going to post that on social media ASAP. Dr. Victoria Coates, you are the best. Let's make that go viral, baby. I love it. And get the book. It's coming out Tuesday, but order it right now. The Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win, with a foreword from Senator Ted Cruz. Have a great weekend, my friend. Go Birds. We got to beat the Steelers, right?
Oh, we have to beat the Steelers. That's something I do not agree with John Fetterman on. So go Birds.
That's where we part company with him. All right, thanks, my friend. And as we
continue, it's the Rich Zeoli Show, live from the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Yes, and speaking of Cherry Hill Volvo, I want to mention that they are, of course, our studio sponsor. This is a great time for you to get your hands on a Volvo, beautiful XC90. For $687 a month, using all applicable rebates, and an extra $2,000 off if you are a Costco member. That's right. Let's go see them right on Route 70 in Cherry Hill. Cherry Hill Volvo is the region's most accessible Volvo dealership, and the one that stands with us at Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. So whether it's the XC90, a beautiful family car with that third row, or it is the S-Class made at their plant in South Carolina, Cherry Hill Volvo is where you want to be. So go see them today, and you'll have a great deal. Judith prides herself on giving her customers the absolute best deal possible. And yeah, there's a little renovation going on, but don't let that stop you. The incentives are absolutely worth it. Cherry Hill Volvo is our studio sponsor, like I said, and the deals, the savings, will always find the best one for you, but never any pressure. That's why relationships matter at Cherry Hill Volvo, and they really, really do. So go see them today, Cherry Hill Volvo, where relationships matter. Also, the top story of the day, of course, which is these drones, brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury. Year-end dental benefits are expiring. Don't let yours go to waste. What you want to do today is reach out to Dr. Mike and book your appointment before the year ends so you can use all those dental benefits, all right? Quick break. We're coming right back. We got lots more to talk about. It's a very busy day for a Friday. Don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
I always tell you about internet privacy being so important in this day and age, and that's why I signed up for Privacy Pro from DuckDuckGo. Now, 3-in-1 privacy solution, $10 a month. You can't pass this up in this day and age. You need it. You absolutely need it. So what do? Well, get a 30-day free trial with DuckDuckGo. See how easy it is to use, how easy it is to use on your phone, your laptop, everywhere. Just go to DuckDuckGo.com/1210 and sign up today. Now, the 3-in-1 privacy solution includes the VPN. I've talked about this with you. You got to have your data encrypted end-to-end, even from your internet service provider, who, yes, is looking to get your data, find out what you're browsing online, and then sell it. No, protect it with the VPN. And every time you're on Wi-Fi at a coffee shop or anywhere else, you're protected. You're always protected. Plus, it has personal information removal, information about you that you don't want on the internet. Your name, your address, your phone number, where you live, all those things gone. And identity theft restoration if your identity is ever stolen. All that for $10 a month? Are you kidding me? Plus, it's from the leader in online privacy, DuckDuckGo, a local company in our backyard, not affiliated with the big guys, and there to protect your privacy. So sign up today for the 30-day free trial before that ends, and it's going to end soon. Go to DuckDuckGo.com/1210. DuckDuckGo.com/1210. Sign up now.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.